Tony Duchesne, and welcome to Drinks with Tony. Hey, February 14th is a Wednesday night, and if you're in the Los Feliz area of Los Angeles, I'm teaching a free creative writing workshop at the Los Feliz Branch Public Library on Hillhurst at Franklin at 6 p.m. Here's what you gotta do. You just show up. Anyone can come. Just show up. Free creative writing workshop. That's Wednesday, February 4th at the Los Feliz Public Library, part of the Los Angeles Public Library System, 6 p.m. Go to lapl.org/events if you'd like to find out more about that. And why do we love it? Because we read and we write and we support our local libraries. And now, on with the show.
Hi, I'm Grant Faulkner, and you are listening to Drinks with Tony.
Get on the Drinks with Tony show. Yeah.
You're listening to Drinks with Tony. I'm your host, Tony Duchesne. Today on the show, we have Grant Faulkner. He is the co-author, actually the author of Something Out There in the Distance with his co-photographer, Gail Butensky. Grant, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Yeah. Thanks for having me on, Tony. Really appreciate it. Where are your drink? Where are your drinks?
I got, well, here's what I do. And here's, this is going to sound so old man. So I love the Tahava tea, right? And so I get it in this thing. And then what I do is I refill it for about 3 or 4 days with water from my filtered Brita system. So these are the drinks with Tony that I have these days. Well, people automatically assume we're getting trashed out of our minds. I'm actually just hydrating. It's hydration with Tony.
Hydration with Tony. I love it. That's a metaphor for stories. They hydrate the soul.
Well, I hope so. Yeah, there we go.
You can get drunk on stories too, though.
Yeah. That's a good, I like that because I do think when we think about how alcohol can at some points enlighten our moods or bring it down, stories can do the exact same thing on like a soul level.
Yeah, we're getting deep, Tony. I don't even have a drink. I don't have a drink here. I just realized I don't have a drink with me. So
what's funny is I think you're the one who asked about the drinks.
I've got
and I think
New Year's Eve hat.
Well, is that say 2026 on it, or is that just a general?
I found it on the street.
You found it on the street, and you're putting some dirty lice ridden Happy New Year on your head.
No, it was sopping wet. It was in the rain.
Oh, okay. It was getting clean.
Sorry, I'm taking you off topic.
Well, this is on topic.
Okay, good.
You're right on it. Yeah, but
I'm on it by being off it.
Yeah, the movement. I've been reading this book, and I don't have it with me right here, but it's been filling my soul in this funny way where like certain times in your life you're like, I would have hated this when I was in my 20s or my 30s, and then like I'm in my 50s and I'm like, oh, this is shifting my soul a little bit. And it's the book is called The City of Marvels by Eduardo Mendoza, I think. I don't know why these like authors land on my radar. I read like one of these books and then I'm on Goodreads going, what have other people read? And so I just go down this weird rabbit hole. And it's all about like Barcelona in the late 1800s. And it's about this corrupt guy that's just trying to make it through life. And I think it's feeding my soul because I feel like I'm just trying to make it through life, and I kind of adore how corrupt he is, even though I wouldn't be that corrupt. But then I forgive it because it's the late 1800s, so you had to be a little more corrupt then.
You could be corrupt in the late 1800s without
you're
too
supposed
much
to be
guilty. Yeah, I think you could get away with a lot back then. So
The it's part of it, and I really got to look up this because I think some of it is really factual about the World Fair happening in Barcelona, and even how when they were like constructing it, like people were dying during construction, and they were just burying the bodies underneath the construction. Like it's just like there's bodies buried underneath where the World's Fair was built, and that's kind of how they saw those people in that day, where they were kind of the lower class. Just
Yeah,
what
just
do we need to do
disposable.
anything? And it's just like,
Yeah, they were just
whoa, it's just like, how crazy
hence
is that?
marks. Hence marks.
Yeah.
Right? Hence marks. It was like Industrial Revolution. People were just treated as machines to be
Yeah.
used and exploited, much like they are in some ways today, in certain
Yeah.
places.
I don't think we and I don't think we'll ever get away from that. I don't think there's any utopia are
No,
coming
I
our
think
way.
I've given up on utopia. Yeah, I think just maybe mere survival is what we should hope for.
Yeah. And hoping that our knuckles don't drag as we're trying to survive.
It's a tough world out there, which is why we need stories, because stories are a way, that opens the door to better things, I think, in general.
It does. How
Yeah,
does it
stories.
open it? Tell me, go on, sir. I interrupted you.
Well, I mean, stories are catalysts in so many ways, right? And I have worked for or started my own, businesses focused on helping people tell their stories. And my thing is, I mean, it's my religion, basically, so I'm going to sound very evangelical here,
No, dude, I gotta tell you, exactly the same here. If storytelling's my religion, keep on, my brother.
So
I'm gonna
if you
get a
think about
handkerchief
it,
out and start like dabbing my
so.
forehead. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I like to think about it in two ways. Like, one way is to think about 100 years ago, the books you would find in a bookstore, and largely written, like 99% of them were by white men and white men who were pretty wealthy, right?
And
They
thank
had
God for
money.
that, because now then we actually get good stories, right?
Well, but now, you walk into, I think we have a broader range of stories, and whatever, we're bigger, fuller human beings, and I mean, we have a long way to go, obviously, in publishing and life, but it is progress, right? Just by looking at the bookshelf from 100 years ago to now. And then the other thing is, I think people underestimate the power of stories, or they don't recognize it, because we have to change culture before policies happen. And so think about gay rights and gay marriage. We wouldn't be where we are without will and grace. We wouldn't be where we are without hundreds or thousands of the books that have been published, and that goes for, racial consciousness, a lot of different aspects of our lives. I think
Yeah,
we've gotten
I mean,
better,
I'm
even
reading
though it
Proust.
seems like everything's crumbling.
Right. I mean, I'm reading Proust right now, which is over.
Oh.
That's like I'm on volume six. Like, that's how crazy I am. And
Congratulations.
there's a point in your
Congratulations.
life where you're like, in search of lost time, it sounds like a great idea, and that was been over the
Yeah.
last. But I mean, that is essentially, he's that's gay storytelling, except he just switched the characters around. So
Right.
I
Now he wouldn't
don't,
have to.
I
Now he wouldn't
don't.
have
Yeah, but at the same time, I
to.
don't think there's anything new, and I don't think there was so much, like, there's so much lesbian love in that book, and just the frustration he's having with his lesbian lovers. And it's just, and especially the 1890s, man, the lesbians were off the hook. It was just,
Yeah,
there's
Proust is
the,
part of
it's
it.
yeah. So I
Proust is
think
part of the, like,
when,
making the culture, like,
yeah.
he's seeding the culture, so the culture changes, and that opens the door
Yeah.
for books that don't have to be, like, masked,
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, that's why it's my religion, because I see it as a force changing the world, and I think it's too often diminished and unrecognized in a bunch of different ways.
See,
So yeah, that's kind of my mission.
well, that's a good mission, sir. For me, storytelling, like, yeah, I have a book that I'm querying now to agents, which I'll be working on even more today. How
Cool.
amazing is it that it takes like 3 weeks to write a one pager when or like a novel, right? I'm just like, oh, it's like rewrite, rewrite. Oh, wait, I'm not touching on this. I'm sending it to my author friends. A couple of them have read the entire book and they're like, what about you lost the whole heart of the story in this query letter. I'm like, oh, you're right, because I'm so not objective to it. But Where was
Query
I
letters
going?
are the tough. Our query letters are so tough, though. They're one
Oh,
of the
they're the
toughest
worst
things to
part of
write.
it. It's
They're the
because I feel
worst.
like a whore. I'm like, this is where we
Well,
go into commerce.
it's true. It's where we go into commerce. It's also, like you said, it's like, how do you capture your novel? You get two or three paragraphs to do it, and
Yeah.
if it's a thoughtful or an experimental novel or about corruption in the late 1800s, I mean, you just don't have that much space for it, and you've got to sell it and tell
Yeah.
the story all in. It's just so hard to do, and you got to
Yes.
speak to the commercial aspects of it. You got to sp speak to the aesthetic aspects and the commercial aspects, and you got to sell it and pitch it, and yeah,
Yeah, I'm trying to see
that's some tough writing.
if I have a
That's some
current
tough
draft of
writing.
it close. My commercial, what is it? It's the world building of a dirty job by Christopher Moore with the irreverent humor of Perfume and Pain by Anna Dorn. So those are the two that I'm kind of smashing together,
I
which
like it.
feels
I
like
like
the
it.
perfect vibe. I'm not sure if they're gonna if as many people know Anna Dorn as I thought. I didn't know of her until a few years ago when I read her book, when a friend of mine was like, after he read my book, he's like, "Oh my God, dude, you gotta read Anna Dorn. She's amazing." And I'm like, okay. And I did, and I was like, oh wow, she's amazing. So anyway, those are
That's
my
one of
two
the best.
comps right now. And
Yeah,
I
that's
hope
one of the
that
best feelings.
yeah, it's but at the same time, I tell my students this too, and it just kind of because I've had good outcomes in publishing and in film. Like I've had great outcomes happen, but even when great outcomes happen, it still feels empty to the soul. And I've learned that it's important to have the current writing project happening now. So even when you have a bad or a good outcome, you have the process to come back to tomorrow. And I think the process itself, even with this book that I wrote, and it took me 4 years to write, the process of writing it actually brought me through a lot of grieving times. And even as I was grieving and having to go about daily life and having a rough time, I saw my big binder that I had to go through that day of scenes I had to work on. And I'm like, I get to play with Sebastian and Carissa today. It was almost like my recess with these characters because I have to serve them. And so just the act of writing is a balm on the soul. And I think it also enriches our soul, so we're better humans. And then, oh yeah, we got a book on the shelf, hopefully.
I'm with you.
That's where my religion is.
Always have your next project in motion. Finish one project and have another project right there. Got to keep the momentum going, keep the hope going. You never know what's going to stick or what's going to work. Like you say, you got to keep filling your soul, with new creativity. So,
And it's funny. So how are you from San Francisco area? How long have you lived there?
no, I grew up in Iowa and I moved here kind of randomly when I was 24 and didn't
Oh,
have
okay.
any. I thought back then I wanted to live like a year in a bunch of different places and just keep moving. And I just, fell. I mean, I found my community here, to tell you the truth. That's why I've stayed. It's for the people, but it's also, great city, great urban area, great in so many ways, culturally. And then, you got hiking at your fingertips, skiing if you're a skier. I'm not. The ocean. I don't do anything in the ocean, but it's nice to have it there,
That's like me in LA. It's like I got the ocean. Well, I'm in the east side of LA, but it's like I got the ocean, I got skiing. I don't do either of them, but it's nice to be in the middle.
It's nice to have it there. Yeah. I mean, I like driving through mountains and by the ocean. And so I've been here. I took a 3-year sabbatical, lived in Tucson for a couple of years, lived in Iowa, went back and was a journalist there for a year. But, most of my adult life here in the Bay Area. So now I've lived here, I guess, yeah, longer than any place. But, a lot of my stories actually are about Iowa or take place in Iowa, because I feel a strong connection, feel very rooted there. But I also like I lived in Tucson for 2 years while my now wife got her MFA. And well, my joke was I didn't like living there, but all of my best fiction was written that took place in the Southwest, including this book, Something Out There in the Distance, that just came out, you know, it's very much about road tripping in the Southwest and getting lost and having a, you know, this desperate searching, you know, road trip, you know, in this case with these two lovers. And so I've just always been enchanted by the Southwest. And, you know, Gail is a great road tripper, and I am happiest when I'm driving through godforsaken lands, you know.
Really?
Yeah, I love the barren. I mean, man, if you give me a car to drive across Nevada right now, and especially like the lonely highway, Highway 50, that's
Yeah.
my definition of joy.
Wow, that's cool. See, I live in L.A.
Yeah.
I'm from San Francisco. I grew up in Millbrae, but I lived most of my life in
Oh,
San
cool.
Francisco. And the thing about L.A., I just cannot get my wrap my head around is how stupid the car culture is and how stupidly laid out it is. It's just like,
Yeah. Well, that's in LA. You got to get out there in the big Southwest and lose yourself where you're the only car
maybe.
for 100 miles. I would drive. I remember one night there was a beautiful sunset and I was on the loneliest highway. It was Highway 50 in Nevada.
Yeah.
And I just stopped the car and like sat on the hood and watched the sunset. No one was coming anywhere close to me.
Wow.
Yeah. So,
And
yeah.
you're
And
watching the
like Gail.
sunset over the Sierras? Is that how it's going down when you're looking?
I can't even remember. I can't even remember. It was just like, it was just a very beautiful moment to be out on the highway and be totally alone on this road. And, you know, Gail and I mean, we used to wait tables together at this restaurant called Radio Valencia in San Francisco.
Right, that's right. She told me
And
about that.
and that's when I fell in love with her photography.
Yeah.
And without any intention or knowledge that we'd do this book 30 years later.
Yeah.
But we did really bond over road tripping, and we share like both, you know, we share an aesthetic on multiple layers, you know. So I think we built in like a kind of creative collaborative trust, you know, for this book. So it was just a great, I mean, just to give the story behind it, her publisher, the very small publisher, you know, I blurbed her first book of photos, and he was like, hey, you know, since Grant does this 100-word story thing, I have 100wordstory.org, which is a literary journal. Every story has to be exactly 100 words.
Yeah.
And he
I
said,
love
like,
that limitation. Like, people have no idea how freeing a limitation is to the creativity.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. In so many different ways, constraints, instead of limiting your creativity, actually can enhance it.
Yeah.
And so anyway, her publisher, editor came up with the idea, and Gail gave me like 40 of her photos or so. And I just kind of picked them out randomly as if I was picking out tarot cards from a card deck and writing little stories to each one. And so I started to play with the form a little bit. I didn't want to be constrained to 100 words. So, but they're all like little flash fiction pieces, meaning that they're very short. So I think probably like 500 or 600 words at most to a photo.
Yeah.
And then I got the idea of like, why not link all these photos together so that they're kind of like a novel, so that they're a longer story. So it's still a very short book, but I think with the photos and the stories told from one of the two main characters, Johnny. So he kind of like narrates as a voiceover with stories to these photos that all link together. And that's why I'm calling it a flash novel, because it has a cinematic feel, you know, it's got a bigger feel, like an expansive feel. And that's, I mean, I'm in love with it for that, both that I got to collaborate with Gail, and I've always liked to write stories to images and photos. And it's such a unique little book, you know, and the publisher of it really invested money in it, which is just so rare for a book like this, you know, like
well,
they printed it, the photos in color and on really nice paper.
And even with a cover that's not a normal cover, which the moment I saw this, I was like, ooh, somebody paid some extra money for that, because that's not. This is not something where you do any print on demand stuff, which drives me crazy because they all look the same.
They all look the same. I know. And that was my argument. You know, it's funny because my agent, when I first showed her this, she was like, well, the big publishers, the big five, none of them are going to be at all interested in this. And so we didn't even go that route. And I had worked with the University of New Mexico Press before and had a great experience. And just since the book takes place in the Southwest, we thought they'd be a perfect publisher. But
Yeah.
we didn't know they were going to invest so much in the book, because part of the reason the Big Five doesn't want a book like this is because it's expensive to produce, you know?
Yes.
And so the University of New Mexico Press took a, you know, they went out on a limb for it, which is just wonderful, because I want different books. I don't want books that look the same.
Yeah.
You know, I want to walk into a bookstore and see a book that like really grabs my attention.
Oh,
And
yeah.
I hope this does. Yeah, I hope it does for the reasons you said. You know, they told us, they said, we want to make it an art object unto itself. And I think they succeeded. Yeah.
That's why I love going into bookstores that actually have the sell chapbooks on consignment, because
Yeah.
those are the first things I'll look at is the chapbooks and what the kind of
Right.
like what the kids or whoever's putting it together, what they're doing. And if it interests me, I want to make absolutely sure that I'm buying those first, because that's what I used to do. And the kick I got out of just thinking when I was young, like, oh wait, that was somebody bought that at City Lights in that little consignment section, and
I know, so
they
great that City
know
Lights.
someone knows who I am and has that book like next to them. I just felt like a god, even though I didn't know
Yeah.
much else.
Yeah, I love that City Lights still carries those little press books and chapbooks and
Yeah.
stuff. Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. Yeah, so yeah, that's a little bit of the background of the book, but it just, you know, came out when a week or so ago. And so Gail and I are already, the other good part about this book is that doing the book tour, Gail and I get to take some road trips together. And so we're just planning out a lot of stops. You're in
Sweet.
LA. We're going to be in LA. I don't know if this airs before it, but let me think. We're going to be there February, oh, is it 19? I think 19, February 19 at Book Soup.
Oh, you're
And
good. Okay, cool.
Francesca Leah Block is going to
Yeah, I
interview
know
us.
her. Yeah.
Yeah,
We teach
she's.
together at a UCLA Extension.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I wrote an introduction for one of Francesca's books. And then we go to
That's
Vegas.
February 19th.
Yeah, I think it's February 19th. That's a Thursday, right?
That's a Thursday.
Yeah, and then February 20th in Vegas. And then we're going to come back, because Gail lives in LA. And so we'll come back later in the year, and we're going to do an official Southwest tour, you know, Tucson, Flagstaff, Joshua Tree,
Cool.
back to LA, stuff like that. Yeah, so
Yeah.
we're gonna have a lot of fun with it. Yeah.
And then there's a bookstore close to where she's at called North Fig. I think it's called North Fig.
Yeah.
That would
Yeah,
be a good
something
one to do an event at.
super good one. In fact, we were gonna do one, but then Book Soup offered us the date.
Oh,
So
okay.
we'll get back to North Fig, because they look like a great bookstore. I've never been there, but that's Gail's neighborhood bookstore, you know,
Yeah,
she
and
lives in
that's
Beverly Hills.
also like that's the way I think that's really the way to hit Los Angeles. You hit Book Soup and then you hit something on the other side of town, because people in
Yeah.
Highland Park are not going to go all the way to Book Soup, and people
Right.
in West LA are not going to go all the way to North Fig.
Yeah.
So you kind of get it's almost like you have to do LA in like a couple of
Yeah,
sections, because it's
geographically.
different cities essentially. It's
It's
like,
the same way here. You know,
yeah.
my first event tomorrow night is in Berkeley, and Gail's coming up for that. And then 2 nights later we go to City Lights in the city. So one night in
Oh, you're
Berkeley,
at
one
City
night.
Lights. When is that, on Wednesday?
Thursday this
Thursday.
week.
Okay, because this will be up. So that is
Cool.
Thursday, January 29th at City Lights. Fantastic. That'll be fun.
Yeah, super fun. And then we go to
Yeah.
Petaluma at Copperfields, which is one of my favorite bookstores, on Friday night, the 30th.
So Petaluma, Copperfields on the 30th on Friday.
Yep.
Is Peter still working the events over at City
Yep.
Lights? Oh, love
Yep.
that guy.
Yep. Yep, this is my first event at City Lights, so I got to say I'm just feeling very, I don't know, honored and happy, because when I first, so I came out, my first time in San Francisco was in 1987, and I was a senior in college, and
Wow.
I didn't know much about San Francisco. My brother lived here, but yeah, I didn't know much about it. And before I came out, I had a friend saying, okay, he told me, he's like, you've got to go to City Lights bookstore. That's a
Yeah.
must see. And I
Yeah.
didn't even know what City Lights was at the time.
Yeah.
You know, so I went to it as a 22-year-old and was all wide-eyed, you know, I mean,
Yeah.
everything about it. And it's still basically my favorite bookstore in the world.
Yes.
So, The idea that I get to do an event there is just like I'm really thrilled by it.
Oh, it's magical. Like when my first novel came out, I got to do my event there, and it was
Oh, cool.
that was just like I felt like something. And yet
Yeah.
it felt like a thing. And
Yeah, it's like going to I don't know, Notre Dame or Chartres Cathedral if you're a Catholic priest or something. Yeah.
Or even going to Shakespeare and Company in Paris if you get to do an event there,
Yeah.
which I want to do one day. Hello, Shakespeare and
I
Company, give me a
know.
call. But
I know. Are they listening? Let's get them on. Let's do a joint event, Tony, at Shakespeare.
I was just in Paris last year, and it's so funny because I hadn't been in Paris since the 90s, when you could just like walk into Shakespeare and Company and just be in like browse. But now it's such a tourist attraction. There's a line, and
Is
I'm
that
just
right?
like, oh, it's kind of not fun. So I didn't go in. There's a couple other English bookstores. There's one right in that area near the Luxembourg Gardens. I can't remember the name of it, but it's just like I just go there instead and go, hey, I don't
Yeah,
want
that's a
to
shame because I remember that old Shakespeare and Company too. It just felt like a regular old bookstore, but with that whole history going back, hundreds of
No,
years
now
ago.
you got to wait in line, and then people just buy a book so they can say they bought a book there, and I don't even know if they're readers. And I'm just like, I want to stand in the. Here's my proposition to Shakespeare and Company. Let's put a velvet rope out, and then I want to stand there and ask them what the last book they read, and then what did they like about it, and then also
I
what
like
is
it.
what their favorite book, and then what did that mean to you? So you have to like, you got to get through the gatekeeper to even walk in there, because we need to know you're a reader, and if you're not a reader, you're not allowed. I'm
I love
ready
it,
for
Tony.
this.
It's kind of the opposite of a Walmart greeter. You're a Shakespeare and Company greeter, but you gotta screen. I like the screening. I think you should write Shakespeare Company and propose this job.
I will take and I'll take it at minimum wage, and I will live there.
I think what better way to live the third act, getting minimum wage as a Shakespeare Company greeter.
It's I don't know if you I mean Tower Records used to be like, remember the people who worked at Tower Records? They were like gods.
Yeah,
And like
totally.
you, they would
I
even
know.
look at.
How do you get a job at Shakespeare and Company, or how do you get a job at City Lights? I remember applying there, and I don't know. There must be some mysterious, magical test that you have to undergo to qualify,
Yeah, my friend
And
Don
I,
what worked there for a while. There was a few people that
yeah,
worked there.
yeah.
And it was it's always fun to pop into. And then
It's like being
there's
royal. It's like being royalty, though. It's like something
No,
far
it
removed
is.
from,
It's next
yeah,
level. It's you're
yeah. It's
you're
next level.
walking, yeah.
Yeah.
It's
I mean, to get a job at City Lights or Shakespeare and Company, you'd have to pass the test that you're proposing as a greeter. It'd be 10 times that, right? You'd have to
Yeah. Oh,
have
yeah.
such a
No.
rich knowledge of books just to pass through the gate
I
to
it,
work the cash register.
and the and it, what would happen is me as pretending like I know what the hell I'm talking about now, they would be like, "Oh no, you cannot do this because you do not know enough. You would not even
Exactly.
make it into the bookstore." And I'll
Yeah.
just be like,
I don't think
"You're right. You're
I
right."
know we wouldn't qualify, Tony. I think both of us they'd we'd make
Yeah.
we might make the final round or the semifinals, but
Yes. They
it's
might
not our
just
cup.
meet with us because we got some books out, and they'll be like,
Yeah.
"Well, let's just be friendly to these guys, 'cause we know it's hard,
Yeah.
this whole book biz, but
Yeah. They might let us clean up at closing or something.
okay, I'll do that."
Yeah.
Dude, I'll do that and write a book about it. Cleaning up at closing at Shakespeare and
Yeah.
Company.
Yeah, that's all I'm qualified for, man. Taking out the trash. Yeah.
How are there so many used condoms in here? I don't know what's going on. And then you dive into that. There's a story, the used condoms of Shakespeare and Company in the
There you
bathroom.
go. I'll let you have
Huh.
that one. That's all yours.
You're like, look, let me just say, one, that's a bad idea. Two, that's yours.
Oh no, that's just yours. Have you worked in a bookstore?
Never have, no. I would love
Okay,
to.
it was my second job out of college, and I mean, every bookstore is probably the same. It's just full of people who are such book lovers that they have to work in a bookstore. And I got paid, this was back in 1987, 88. I got paid $3.30 an hour.
I
And
remember
the
those
owner of the book,
wages.
yeah, and the owner of the bookstore would only allow us to work 30 hours a week because there was some, he'd have to do more legally or pay us differently
Right.
or
Or give
whatever.
you
We would
benefits,
cost savings
probably.
banks, give me benefits or something.
Yeah.
And so I, it was $100 a week
Yeah.
pre-tax, you know, and that's what I was supposed to live on.
Yeah.
It, I mean, it's crazy. It was crazy. I mean, somehow I did live on it, but I think there were a lot of little like Hostess. I'd eat Hostess cakes for lunch and hot dogs for dinner, and yeah, wasn't exactly healthy living.
Well, it's kind of like the writer living.
The writer living, yeah. No, no nutrition here. Just
I
filled the
entered
stomach.
20 years ago. You know who Richard Hell is? He's the
Yeah, of
musician,
course.
and
Yeah,
but he's
yeah,
also put out a lot of books. So
yeah.
about 20 years, a little more than 20 years ago, I interviewed him at the Argus, which is now a different name in Bernal Heights. And anyway, I assumed that, especially with Blank Generation. I mean, Blank Generation is a song of a generation, of an era. When you think of the song Blank Generation, it brings you right to this moment. And do you hear that or no?
I don't hear anything. No,
Okay,
just
good.
you.
They're like doing it. I'm just throwing garbage cans all over out my window, so I'm just
Okay.
glad it's not
Okay.
coming out of the air. But
Yeah.
I was just like, you must make a lot of money off of that. And he just looked at me. He was like, no. He
No.
go, and then he's like, look, here's the thing. You want to be a writer? You got to keep your needs minimal. And that blew my
Yep.
mind because I thought someone like Richard Hell would be living in a castle because that's what I assumed would be for
Or
the
at least a two
band.
bedroom, at least a nice two bedroom ranch house or something, right?
Right. No, he lives in the same rent control place in the Lower East Side that he grabbed in the 1970s or whatever. So he's under rent
Yeah.
control and he keeps his needs minimal so he can be a writer, which is his
Yeah.
first love. And it's so funny, it's his first love because he's so known for the
Music, yeah.
Voidoids and just everything he did in that scene, in that era.
Well, it's interesting because so many people misunderstand both music and writing, you know, because you can get somewhat famous like him,
Yeah.
yet not make much money. And
Yeah.
like I remember, like I guess it was my second book I published. I had a, you know, childhood friend from back in my hometown in Iowa, and he was like, "Oh, you must be really rich now."
Yeah.
You know, I mean, a lot of people project that because you've written a book that you're making a lot of money, when it's quite the opposite. Like I think if I tallied up the hours that went into any book I've written, especially the hours and hours of essentially like a 20-year apprenticeship trying to
Yeah.
learn the craft of writing, that don't even count. But I think most writers are lucky if they earn minimum wage. They're probably
Oh
earning something
yeah.
like more like $3.30 an hour, you know,
Oh, or even a
at
dollar
the
an hour,
lowest.
because it's just
Yeah.
it is that insane. At the same time, we do get the lovely benefits of being able to be teachers and to like
Yeah.
do things like that where they go, oh, wait a second, you do have like even in film, people assume I'm, oh wait, you live in LA, you got it made. You got a film out, you worked with like these famous people. And I'm like, I live in a studio. Like
Yeah.
in not the best part of town. And what's funny is there are some celebrities that are kind of like well known, but that like live in the exact same type of studio as I do in my same area. But
I
the
know.
assumption is just because they've been on Howard Stern or on these Tonight shows that they're going home to their palatial places when
That's
they're
not
just
true.
like taking their beat up
I
Honda
rem
back home.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know this particulars, but I remember reading, this is like 5 or 6 years ago, this profile of Parker Posey, who to me would is so successful and such a
Yeah.
wonderful, you know, whatever, wonderful person and actress. But she was living in a very common, if not, you know, whatever. She was struggling for money, let's put it that way. I
Yeah,
mean, I'm sure she's doing better now that she's been on White Lotus and stuff, but she did, you know, she
yeah.
mainly did indie films, and, you know, so she probably didn't get a big paycheck, you know. Anyway, I mean,
Yeah.
it's just, I totally know what you mean. I mean, and the same thing with writers too. I mean, writers, every writer I know, and I know, you know, some of them have had, you know, amazing success, but they're still hustling to make it, you
Yeah.
know. They have side gigs, side jobs, teach, whatever, you know.
Right.
You know, so very few make a living just off their books. And when you were talking about the bridge from art to commerce, you know, there's a lot of generally there's a lot of compromise if you're going to make money. And I gave up the idea of making money from writing long ago. You know, it's just not something I mean, I'm sure at some point in my 20s or 30s, I probably tried to write a commercial novel, but I only write stuff that I want to write. I only want to, you know, like write stuff that serves my soul, and I only want to be in service of the story. So,
Oh,
you know,
that's the only way to approach it. And I do the same thing with my students who are younger and like eager and really like, I do, oh, I'm writing for the market. Like people have actually said they're writing for the market. And I'm like, don't, do not. Because guess what? It's not going to work. And here's why. The market is fickle and the market is cyclical. So when you write your authentic self and you're writing what serves your soul, it may not be the market for now, but you have no idea what comes up when you're finally finished with a draft, or it's a year after the draft, and then all of a sudden they're like, wait, we need this, this, and this, that fickle market. And you just present it to them, and that's how these people, it's just like kind of you get lucky fulfilling your soul. Yeah, I could never spend, I feel like it hurts the gods of writing if you spend it, or even. And that's the other thing with putting the query letter out to the book is I don't want to put pressure on the book. Like I feel energy on the book. Like even as like a, oh, this needs to make a certain amount of money. No, it doesn't. It's open to the best publisher. That's it. Now I'm open to a nice five, six figure deal. That's fine. But I'm also open to just the right publisher and four figures.
Exactly. It
It's,
matters a lot.
yeah, it just, I'm open to the success of it, but I'm also, there is no pressure on the book because the book is its own entity and it's almost like I have a relationship with it. And it's, I don't want to put a gun to its head to provide me with something. It's already provided me with everything I've ever wanted, which is gave me characters that I got to like, have so much fun with in this world. So it's, I got to write the book that I wanted to read, but create it. How much fun is that? And I think in a commerce society, it's sad that people don't dive into that 100% with love. Not because it's just because they just don't know that how important it is for the inner self. To just explore it and explore the fun of taking an idea of nothing, and then all of a sudden it's something, but you did the reps for years and years and years to get to something.
So anyway, if I'm like you, if the book if things sell, bring in money,
Yeah.
fantastic. But otherwise, Gail and I created a beautiful thing
Yeah.
together, and it's been fun already putting it out in the world and having friends and acquaintances and strangers buy it and send me little notes. I mean,
Yeah.
I just came back from, you know, I visited my mom who's in a care center in Iowa, and I just went back there and I squeezed in two book events. But it
Sweet.
was magical. It was magical in the sense of like, you know, people showed up and it was like negative 20 wind chill, stuff like that. It was super
Yeah.
cold. But people showed up, you know, and I met people, you know, who I didn't know, you know, who'd listened to my podcast or, you know, somehow knew about me. And it was all about those human connections and, you know, the connections essentially of storytelling. And that's why it's so valuable.
Yeah.
And that mattered more than even the book sales, you know. It was just so getting there, you know, I get creative fuel, like it sounds like you do, from that human interaction, you
Oh,
know.
yeah.
And so it's not like I'm out there hawking books. It's like we are serving something higher together.
Yeah. And it's like I have to teach in order to write, and I have to write in order to teach. And I feel like a lot of the teaching, almost on a religious level, where I'm telling my students, oh no, you need to write every day. And I'm like, I'm giving them drills, and then if I take a day off of writing, I'm like, I'm losing my spirituality because I'm not practicing what I preach. And so that guilt that drives me going, oh my God, I just told all my students that they need to do this. I better be way on more on top of it than them because I'm the one that's sitting there pushing them to get out of their comfort zone, and I need to push myself to get out of my comfort zone.
Yeah, I'm with you. The days I don't write, I'm the worst for it. I'm crankier.
Well, yes, and it's better for society for us to not be cranky. So what we're doing
So.
as two individuals to make a better world is writing so we can give a little bit more positive shift to just
Yeah.
interaction in life. And I think if more
Absolutely.
people wrote, that would help the whole entire world.
I'm with you, man. That's why my mission is to help people write their stories, you know. I mean, when I was doing that comparison of like what books were in bookstores 100 years ago, I mean, if we, you know, we have a lot of taboo subjects in our culture, right? A lot of things that just weren't talked about. They were forbidden. And we've only opened up those taboo subjects through stories, you know. And so many people have lived, you know, obviously like hundreds of years without these stories being told, without this side, these sides of human life being recognized. So, you know, yeah, we got to have those chapbooks. We got to have all types of vehicles to tell the stories, you know, whether it's a chapbook or an internet site or a Facebook post. In some ways, you
Well,
know, I guess we
Facebook
got to say
posts
that
now you're
things.
now Facebook posts are a little bit easier to go blah 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 enter. You know, there's
Yeah.
a that we need to get to the craft. It's a
Yeah, but you can't, but you can. You know, in some ways we're living in the golden age of storytelling, you know, like if you think about like when Twitter first came around and it was fun, and I'm not trying to support like the tech bros who manage this stuff, but like I remember the early days of Twitter and writers were having a lot of innovative fun with Twitter, you know,
Oh,
like
that's right.
Jennifer Egan wrote a novel in tweets, you know. And there's, you know, so I mean, I think a lot of us are getting deadened to the social media, but I think it is a storytelling form. And so I think we're living in the golden age of writing in a lot of ways because writing has never mattered more than it is matters now because so many people are expressing themselves publicly, you know. And not that people didn't used to write as much as they do now, you know. So,
And
and
the
even
other thing,
texting too.
the other thing is like a quill pen is not easy to put to burn, you know. Just having a
Yeah.
typewriter is like was an
Oh
invention
man.
of like next level. It's like wait a second. And then that I still handwrite like everything. Like all my first drafts are
You do?
handwritten and then I
Really?
transcribe them just
Yeah.
because I can't. Unless I'm writing an article, I can do articles more on a keyboard. But if I'm working on my novel or I'm working on a short story, it just ha I just need that. This only cost me $2 to have the pad and the paper, and I can sit there and write this. And I'm not writing it on a machine that costs more than $1,000. It's just like
Yeah.
I don't need the machine. I don't need the plug. I need a candle and I need the pen. That's it. I kind
Yeah.
of, it's like that's said, it's a, probably a psychotic belief that I have, but I almost, it's almost like if everything just dumps, I still have fire and ink.
Yeah, and well, it's a different creative process because when you handwrite things, your brain is actually moving in a different rhythm than when you're typing. You slow down. There's that tactile experience of the pen. I find that I do discover richer thoughts when I'm handwriting, you know. Not I don't handwrite the whole my whole book like you do, but I do occasionally, especially when I'm stuck or something, just take a break from the computer and get out a piece of paper and pen. And people, I think, forget that that's actually a good thing to do, you know. I think that we're all kind of, I think too many of us are wedded to our technology as a, you know, and I love it. I love my laptop. I love like, I mean, my God, I always say I was like one of the last people to go to college with a typewriter in hand because I was going to
Sweet.
college.
Oh,
I was going to college right as that transition was beginning
yeah.
to happen. So by my senior year of college, almost everybody was bringing computers to school. But I can barely, I mean, imagine living without copying and pasting, cutting and pasting. I mean, the fantastic technology for me is copying and pasting. And so, back with the typewriter thing, I remember writing stories by longhand and then typing them and then correcting with type out. And man, when you typed a page, that was it, Like there's no going back. And so, there's part of me that's like, I'm like, how did Tolstoy write those books? Well, his wife actually typed them, but just any writing before computers is sort of amazes me, that you could get this cohesive product together.
Yeah, and it's and like you said, it's it kind of slows down the brain. I think sometimes the brain needs to be slowed down a little bit when we can when we're working on our stories. Even though
And with
with the
typing,
go ahead.
yeah, I was gonna say with typing, I mean, like you do draft after draft, so you'd have to retype it. So it was a whole different way of kind of editing and thinking about your story. You're much more in touch with it. And I do know writers who still use typewriters. I mean, I don't, but it might be an interesting thing to do,
Yeah, I did get a typewriter a few years ago, but it just jammed up on me, and like getting the ribbon was just it was always just such a
I know,
pain.
getting the ribbon, man. Getting the ribbon is
Yeah, it's like you can get the
a pain.
typewriter, but finding the ribbon that actually works,
Yep. And
it's
they
like
dry up. Like I got a typewriter and I don't know, I didn't use it for 6 months or a year, and then I tried to use it and the ribbon was all dry, it was all useless. So
I gave up. The
yeah.
oh, you do a podcast. What's your podcast?
It's called Memoir Nation. It started out as the Right Minded podcast. And we would, basically interviewed writers of all genres. But my partner and co-host, Brooke Warner, and I, we started this writing organization. We just launched it last May called Memoir Nation. And so we rebranded our podcast to be Memoir Nation. And, we've got about 20,000 subscribers, and we've gotten amazing guests like, Roxane Gay and Amanda Knox and even EJ Carroll, and just so many great guests have come on. And so so it's been fun. Keeps me in touch. I mean, it really drives my reading. I wish I had more time to do pleasure reading like I used to, but I just try to read the books to keep up with our guests. But that also, like, that exposes me to things that I wouldn't have encountered otherwise. So it's been great. And the Memoir Nation is an organization we basically to help. I used to be executive director of National Novel Writing Month, so it's a little bit like National Novel Writing Month except for memoirs. And so we dedicate the month of January to this challenge called January Story, and writers, the challenge is to write 500 words a day of your memoir, so 15,000 words in a month. And we have a whole supportive community around that, and we provide a lot of resources and support. And then we have, we have a variety of ways to support people throughout the year to write their memoirs. So National Novel Writing Month was a nonprofit. This is a for-profit. So, but we always will have a free tier, like it's free to do January Story. And but we also have paid tiers too, where you get more support and more classes. So yeah, we
That's
just had Maggie Nelson teach a class, and Carvell Wallace, and I'm trying to think who else is coming. Somebody great. Oh yeah, Victoria Chang is going to teach a class. So
cool. Oh, yeah,
good stuff.
that there's a friend of mine. She wrote a book called I Was a Teenage Dominatrix. Her name is Shauna Kenny. She also teaches with me at UCLA Extension.
Oh, cool. I was going to say, Francesca, I think we're going to have Francesca teach a class for us.
Oh yeah, Francesca's great. I've done panel with her too before. She's great.
So anyway, yeah, that's my main endeavor is Memoir Nation right now,
Oh, cool.
in addition to writing and a few other things. But yeah, Memoir Nation. Hope your listeners subscribe to our podcast and give it a whirl.
Yeah, and hopefully they'll subscribe to mine too. Maybe they won't even
I know.
subscribe to mine. They just pass through mine and go, wait a second, that weather one sounds good.
No. I
Hey,
want to make sure
love
to
to
sign up for yours
everybody.
too.
Love to everybody.
Love to everybody. That's the way. That's a good business principle. Good life principle, good business principle.
Exactly. The book is called Something Out There in the Distance. Grant Faulkner is co-author. Grant, thank you for coming on the show.
So fun, Tony. You're a fun guy. Interesting. I like the free form nature of this conversation. So who knew? Who knew that Walmart greeters were going to come up as a metaphor?
All right, that was fun. Hey, you are listening to Pirate Cat Radio, KPCR, drinkswithtonyshow.org. And what am I asking you to do right now? I'm asking you to please donate. Donate to keep this radio station alive. Us volunteers here get a real kick out of having you as listeners. And I hope you as listeners get a real kick out of having us talk into your ear holes. Go to kpcr.org/give to give to KPCR to help us continue to be a non-corporate entity. That's what's so much fun about this. Radio. See, when I was young, here we go. Like when I was a little kid in the 1970s and I had a transistor radio, I could turn on the radio and there would be, it was like everything was regional programming. There was no corporate overlords. It was very against such things. And even into the 1980s, it was there. We had KSAN, we had all these different like radio stations. And then what happened to the San Francisco Bay Area is the Quake came in and the Quake started playing kind of punk rock. And it was just like, wait, where did this come from? Us very influenced little teenagers that we were. And then all of a sudden in like 1986, 85? Ooh, might have been earlier. Quake shut down. And Live 105 was still playing Top 40. Yes, there was a time they were Top 40. And then what we did is some of us went to Left of the Dial to find college radio. And college radio is a great place to be. And then I became a huge fan of KFJC. But when I lived in San Francisco, this was around 2004, I got to listen to Pirate Cat Radio and I went, this is great. You know what? I got to join this, and join it I did. And now I get to like still be at Pirate Cat Radio over 20 years later. So do me a favor and give and donate. Go to kpcr.org/give. We are now broadcasting in Santa Cruz, in Los Gatos, and in Portland. And I just want to say hello and hi and thank you to all of you. kpcr.org/give. And some of you are listening online, so that's a lot easier to just go over to it. I remember one time when we were at the cafe, when the studio was at the cafe in the Mission District, and I did a little thing. I was trying, what did I call it? It was Drinks with Tony, but it was live, and I had Irvin Welsh on in the cafe, and then there was a nice little audience. It was just like an afternoon audience. Irvin Welsh and I interviewed, and then I went questions to the audience, and it was so much fun because it felt like Merv Griffin just going out there, or Oprah Winfrey going, okay, and you next, and we got such a kick out of that. It was you know, those beautiful things that tended to happen in the afternoons. I remember that there was some cool downtown stuff too that would happen in the afternoons when I was working, and you just like take a lunch break and you go see Rick Steves talk about traveling to Europe. Gee, that was probably in the 1990s. Anyway, I'm veering here, but maybe what I was trying to do was like my own Rick Steves version, but of a literary figure like Irvin Welsh, who wrote Trainspotting and so many other great books. And he's written films, he's put out records. And we got to do all of that at Pirate Cat Radio. And we still get to do things like that at Pirate Cat Radio. So go to kpcr.org/give and send over a donation. Just your milk money for the day. You know how when you were younger and you'd get beat up at recess for not giving your milk money to the jocks? Well, maybe it didn't happen to you, but it happened to me. And what I had to do was I had to hand my milk money over. But now that I'm an adult, I don't have to hand my milk money over to some bully. I can hand my milk money to kpcr.org/give. And it's just so much more fun because now I have control over my milk money. And milk money is everything, because when you don't have your milk, then you got to drink out of the water fountain during recess and lunch. And when you drink out of the water fountain, Other people put gum in it and they spit in it. They do all this crazy stuff. So there was something about having your milk and the deep humiliation of a bully who would come up to you and take your milk money, and then they would go get milk and you wouldn't get milk. And we're giving you milk. And what we'd like you to do is to not let the bullies take it. And when I say the bullies, I'm talking corporates, I'm talking corporations. They're taking it by taking your attention. They're throwing in those silly commercials. We don't throw in commercials. We just ask you once in a while, hey, throw some milk money our way, you know. But we're not going to beat you up over it. If you can't, you can't. And, you know, that's fine. Feel good about yourself. Feel good about yourself that, you know what? You just have great taste. You have great taste in radio, great taste in music, and you have great taste in listening to great talk shows, not other talk shows that are trying to get you angry and all riled up and on one side or the other. Sometimes you're listening to me, and what do we talk about? We talk about books and stories, just like I got to talk about with Grant just now. And how much fun is that? And so, you know, keep the programming going with us. And it's just milk money. So go to kpcr.org/give. For those of you who never got beat up by a bully during school, it's not as bad as you think. It kind of gets you ready for the future. And it also kind of, see, I was one of those kids that also kind of talked back. And I thought I could talk my way out of fights. And by being funny, but sometimes I was funny at the expense of the bully. That's where I got my butt kicked. So, you know, I learned a thing or two. And I guess as you've listened to the show, I may have not learned enough. But you know, it's that's how life goes. Anyway, I hope you do enjoy the show, and I hope you enjoy listening to Pirate Cat Radio. And I just want to give a shout-out and say thank you for listening. And if you can give us a shout-out back and go, hey, you're welcome for being there, and here's a little bit of cash. kpcr.org/give. Please donate. This is Tony Duchesne from Drinks with Tony, and I'm just saying thank you for listening, and also please donate. It's kpcr.org/give. I'll see you next week.